It's time for another episode of Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, A Fit Life, The Living Strong Series, powered by Bad Boy Mowers, Mow With An Attitude. And today, it's all about youth athletes.
Sheer Strength here with another podcast moving forward. Rob, Blake, Jake, and our guest again, Nate.
The guys say bon voyage to Blake as he prepares to head across the pond to coach American football in England.
Back to London, we're starting like a league of sorts throughout Europe. An all-star league.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
They discuss legacy athletes and how to create a stable and continuous stream of young, skilled players.
Is there something to having a legacy of success in a region, in a school, in a team, in a sport, you know, that kind of thing? Legacy really drives people.
And they highlight the advantages of growing up as a child of an athlete.
When you're a kid that hung out in the locker room or hung out on the sidelines, you always approach the game with a little bit more savvy. You can see an athlete's kid a mile away, especially a high-level athlete's kid.
This episode of Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, A Fit Life, The Living Strong Series is brought to you by the provider, Jack Links, Traeger Grills, and Mickey Thompson Tires. Let's get to it.
Hey, gang.
Hello.
Here we go. We're back. Thanks, Chad. Sheer Strength here with another podcast moving forward. Last one with Blake for a little while. Blake's going to leave us for a short-term vacation / developmental football in across the pond where they don't know what a football is. So
I'm going back. I'm going back to London. More football. Whoa, I'll be gone 2 months.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm
quickly,
jumping out on Sunday.
Last time you gave us the 30-minute version of what you were going to be doing. Give us the 3-minute version of what you're doing.
So, yeah, leaving on Sunday, back to London. We're starting a developmental and an all-star team in London. That's what I'm there to do, is like grow and develop, kind of lay the foundation for what that's going to be. But big picture, we're starting like a league of sorts throughout Europe, an all-star league, just helping these guys get good film, good exposure, access to American coaches, and a developmental side.
Is this in an effort to get them to the league? Like
A lot of them, yeah. So
good question.
To the league, to the States, mainly for college. Like they all have the same ambitions as kids here. The kind of two problems is they start late. So they start at like, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old. So they don't have a ton of development on the front end anyway. The youth leagues aren't, you know, very well established. And then on top of that, just, yeah, the avenues through which they get to America, the contacts, you know, that whole thing. Obviously, here in the States, you can go to camps. You can show up on campus, like, right at the drop of a hat. Over there, they don't have the same access. So being able to reach out and touch American coaches, like, that's kind of something we see a ton of value in.
They also haven't been running into each other.
Yeah, they're fresh.
That's a little bit. That's kind of what we talked about last time. I mean, think of the foot skills that some of these, you know, if they've been playing soccer and doing other stuff, some of these kids could have some really good basic skills that transfer really good. But like you said, they don't know the ins and outs of the American game.
Yeah, they're good athletes. You know, it's like I said, the developmental side of football. That's kind of what we're out there to do. And then the kids that are, you know, a little bit more ready, we'll play a few games, you know, once a month or every other month against one of our other teams. So I'm starting this team in London. We just announced our team in Frankfurt today, Lisbon, Portugal, and then we have a team down in the south of France. So if you know, like, the baseball system out here, some of those all-star teams that kids play with, like Perfect Game or Trotsky or something like that, it's very, very similar model. You know, bring them all together for a tournament or, you know, a scrimmage weekend full of football and then send them back to their clubs that they're with. So,
cool.
Yeah, bouncing out for a couple months. I'll be back before school's even over. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, came about fast, but.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And we're going to do our inaugural podcast with Blake across the pond. Yeah. We haven't figured that out yet.
We
got to get him. We got to get him a real speaker or something. I don't know. Bring your speaker with you.
Okay.
That's what we'll do. We'll figure it out.
We'll catch you 1 a.m. at a pub.
Yes, it's going to be.
We'll be mid workday.
It will be on our time, though.
That's
just
fine.
So you know. But you're young. You can figure it out.
I'm nocturnal.
Yes. Exactly. After a night session of playing video games, we'll hit you.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm already communicating back and forth at funky times anyway, so.
Perfect.
It's all good.
Yeah, it will be on our time.
Right now, I think it's 7 hours ahead.
I don't know.
Seven or eight? Let me check. Yeah, 7:02 right now in London. That's perfect.
7:02 p.m.?
P.m.
Oh,
that's not bad at all.
Yeah, so I'm in business. We're in business.
It'll be pre-video games then.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
We'll get you fired up.
Off straight out of the booth and right into the gaming chair.
Get him ready
chair.
To talk shit to the boys.
Oh, my God. That's I'll be fired up. Yeah, don't get me afterwards. My tongue will be foul.
Bleep. Bleep. We can bleep that out. We can figure out the edit. All right. So, yes, we brought Nate back because he's got a unbelievable voice for radio, and the girls think he's cute too, but you know, whatever. Yeah. All right, so we're just gonna jump right in because last time Nate was here, we were on the athletic development side. We were talking really, you know, working with the young ladies and how to mentor them and get them to go. So we're gonna kind of continue from there because we still had a few things to do, and Nate being as smooth as he is, kind of had some questions for us, and he's way more prepared than me. So we're gonna jump right in. Kind of let's go with where we were, what you talked about. We had kind of talked about Amy,
yeah,
Nate's wife, and how she just set goals, learned from seniors when she was freshman, and then was like, I'm breaking every record that's been set here, and just we're kind of talking about that, so we'll go from there.
Yeah, well, to give a little bit of background on Amy, she is from Indiana, and now obviously Indiana is in the middle of Big Ten country, and so sports are pretty serious there. That's mm-hmm. something that they take pretty seriously in general. Amy was MVP of her varsity team 4 years in a row. So
dang,
she was also, yeah. Which is, you're like, all right, that's cool. That's everyone has a varsity team. Everyone has an MVP.
Yeah.
She was also the league MVP 4 years in a row. When she was a senior, she was the Indiana State Player of the Year. She was a top 50 recruit out of high school, went to Penn State, like ended up being a 3-time All-American, ended up being SEC Defensive Player of the Year as an outside hitter.
Right.
So like Amy's a pretty accomplished volleyball career.
You could say that.
Yeah. That's all right. And yeah, if you're into that. And that is kind of the thing that I wanted to gear us towards is, I don't know that Amy would have done that had she grown up in Reno or Boise or Flagstaff or wherever. Maybe she would have done that too. But there is something to the legacy of that area. And I think that's something that I wanted to push us towards was, I just wanted to talk about the power of legacy. Do we invest anything in that? Is that something that we think is real? It's like the question of momentum. Like, is momentum a real thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
You mean it's in a game? We talked about last time, you know, once you're rolling, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like, man, that team is just, for some reason, right. They got figured out.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And then the stat heads will say, well, no, that's just a blip. You know, these things go like that. It's not an emotional thing. And, you know, it might be real. I don't know. But the idea of the power of legacy I wanted to bring to us is, what has that ever hit us where you go, like, because people from this area do these kinds of things and are successful in this area, does that mean that they're always going to do that? Is there a, oh, she did it, so I can, like we talked about Roger Bannister the last time, like the idea of someone shifting the paradigm to being now, oh, you can totally do that. I just need to have the right mindset that you can. And having examples and role models like we talked about last time about people that have taken us down that path. So I just wanted to open that up. Is there something to having a legacy of success in a region, in a school, in a team, in a sport, you know, that kind of thing?
I got a couple things.
Yeah.
It's really weird, and I'm going to do a podcast with Chad on Friday, and he's got the baseball coach on, but I think, number one, Reno's a weird area, right? Because it is a college town. We've got a college here. But it is, to me, the college is, it's so different from the other things. There's so many things going on in Reno. It's not considered a college town. Whereas you go to Clemson, there isn't a damn thing there except for the college.
Yeah, that isn't associated with it.
Literally nothing there at all. When I went there, I was like, oh my God, I'm lost. And then you come over this hill and you're like, oh, big college. But there's nothing 30 miles around there. And when you're in the SEC, I think there's only, if I remember this right, and it may have changed a little bit, but when you're in the SEC and you're a football team, you can't stay anywhere. There's only two places you can play where you can stay there. Everything else is between an hour and an hour and a half away because they can't support you with the hotel rooms and the facilities for your team and the team meeting rooms and food. So you got to stay all the way somewhere else and then get on the buses to go to the game. And so Reno is a college town, but it's very different there. And the reason I bring that up, Nate, is because I wonder if some of that comes from being around more of a area where the college is everything. And so it's just, you know, you see it at the college level, then you see it at the high school level, and it's got this trickle down effect. Number one, I wanted to throw that out. Number two, the other thing, when you look at Indiana and you look at the area, like you said, the it used to be kind of that blue collar hard worker, you know, that's where Joe Montana came from, and that's where Terry Bradshaw came from, you know, and you bring up those names, and they weren't these stellar athletes. They were just kids who knew how to work really hard and kind of develop. So I wonder if part of that is area and some of these newer areas that are growing up really fast, like a Boise, and you get to talk about Boise or a Reno or a Vegas, that there's so much growth and it's so diverse in terms of who's moving there, yeah. If that influences it at all. Because, I mean, I totally agree with you. You think when you set those parameters and you've got this tradition and you're like, this is how we do it because this is what's been proven for the last 20 years. We're not going to deviate from this, you know? And so I don't know. I just wanted to throw those two thoughts out. And I think the last thought with that is it because of coaching now? When you look at coaching now, you're lucky if you're at a place for more than 5 years. You know, most of these coaches are here for three, and then they're either so good that they move on or they're so bad that they move on. And so is that part of the issue with the development or the programming?
Yeah, I mean, in a place like Boise, it's like that program, are we on the football side of things? Well, A, the university has grown as the football program has kind of driven it forward. So all their sports have kind of grown to the top level because it's a recognizable brand.
Right.
So in recruiting and stuff, I'm sure that serves them, even in volleyball. Like I know our volleyball team was really good while I was there. Our swimming team was really good. But talk to all the coaches. Like we'd have the swim coach come and talk to us because he's very, or the tennis coach, very, you know, well respected in his world. And he's always, you know, you guys are setting the example for all of you guys are the guys that bring 30,000 people to watch you guys every Saturday. So our girls see that and they, you know, they feed off that energy. So, you know, all the way down through recruiting, Boise's been done a really good job at growing that like global brand. But you take that down locally, they play a lot higher level sports there at the high school level than we do here in Reno. Very similar population size, very similar demographic. Like there's not much of a difference that I see, you know, between the two cities.
True.
But they play at a lot higher level and their athletes go on to play, you know, college sports at a higher level in greater numbers, I guess. I don't know if that's a matter of, call it manifestation or, you know, but I really think that just being able to see it as a youth athlete and see it done at a high level, you understand that it can be done at a high level. And then, so the way in which you work comes from a belief of like, well, if I do A, B, and C, D is the outcome. You know what I mean? And for the kids, you know, in a place like Boise, D is, you know, getting to play on the blue or something like that. And what BSU has always done a really good job of, especially in football, is harboring the best local talent, whether that's as a walk-on or they give a couple of the kids the scholarships, put a couple of those local guys on scholarship. So these kids that are growing up there understand like, okay, well, if I can rise to the top of my class locally, I'll at least get a shot here at BSU. And then where that goes is BSU plays at a national level competitively. So you also understand that if you can compete at the highest level around town, you can then compete at the university level. And if you can compete at that university, you can compete at a national level. So that, you know, it's a perpetual cycle where they stay at the top.
And they're actively trying to do that. Again, those are the role models. Those are the people that you're like, yep, I can totally do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening. Yeah. I mean, I see like a clear through line through Big Ten programs and the surrounding areas being successful athletically because those programs, A, they're old. They've been there for a long time and not just a long time, like a couple hundred years, right?
Yeah.
Like those schools and programs and things have been, those are old institutions. There's a really big following and not just a like Reno, to be terribly honest, is a fair weather opportunity.
Yeah.
If you're good, they'll come. And if you're not, They won't. Mm-hmm. It's just is.
Well, we were sorry to interrupt, but we were talking about that today because if you saw UNLV play at the end of the season basketball, mm-hmm. they got a full crowd. It's like Reno. They have a full crowd right now. Last year, I remember watching a couple games. I think they had 2,000 fans. So between Reno and Vegas, it's really similar that way where you watch Iowa was watching the girls game last night, which is held, their March Madness was actually held at Iowa. The fans did not leave after the game. And, you know, you go to a Nevada game and probably because the parking's so bad, we'll talk about that later. But people are like, it's 2 minutes left. We got to get out of here. And the crowd is clearing out. Last night, it looked like at that game, people were like, I'm staying here till they kick me out. I mean, So again, it's that, and I want to come back to you, Blake, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but why is Reno and Boise different? What is it? You were there long enough. I mean, because I look at that all the time. We used to, when we competed in the Big Sky with Boise, we had their number. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it changed. And it didn't just change a little bit. It changed to the extreme where, like, now they're ahead in this football series by, like, 10 or 12 wins. And we were up on them by 10 or 12. And that's, I'm talking over 30 years. They've swiped it big time. And is it because... I'm going to come back to this one. If you're the best in Indiana at basketball, you're going. I'm going to Indiana to play hoops, or Purdue right now, maybe, right? Or if you're at Michigan, you're like, I'm going to Michigan to play football. And if I drop off just a hair, I'll go to Michigan State, you know. Or if you're in Florida, I want to play at Florida or Florida State. And here, people are going, I want to play really good. I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? You know, I mean, they're probably not going, I want to play in Nevada. They're going, I'm hoping to go to California. I'm hoping to go to Washington. I want to go to Arizona, you know, for these sports. So any idea?
Yeah. That's a tough one. It's hard to put your finger on, you know. Again, they do a good job at harboring the local talent and making them feel welcomed and important. Demographically, it's really the same, but... the culture of the city is a lot different. There is a lot going on in Reno. Like, that's just other stuff. We, you know, whether it be skiing, whether anything, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? If you've been to Boise, Idaho, it's kind of just Boise, you know? And where it's nestled in there, kind of like, you know, just east of the Northwest, they're not really the West, you know? It's kind of, a lot of Boise people like being a native Boise person, you know what I mean? They take that pretty serious, and they... the way in which they rally around the team, it's like it's their team, mm-hmm. you know? And whether that's because they don't have a professional sports team that's very close. I don't know. There's a lot of different factors mm-hmm. kind of like that. But
yeah.
the support is like, you know, runs so deep in town.
Like, and it's not just the financial support.
No, not right, even, right. Because that's even limited because it's a working class town. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a big money operation like a Texas A&M or something like that.
Right.
But just the real core level support of everywhere you go, everyone's wearing blue and orange, or the store clearly supports Boise State because they're hanging the banners. You know, the university's done a great job at garnering the city's support.
Yeah.
It sits right in the middle of the city. And mm-hmm. I don't know all the details of it all, but it seems that the two kind of live in coexistence. Like, as the university has grown, you know, the city has grown around it and fully supports it. And if it's like anything wants to come in and that doesn't support like that structure, it doesn't really last.
Yeah.
But I remember all the old Boise heads, because we have a great alumni association. They were like, no, the University of Nevada like put us on. We were competing with them. They lobbied for us to get into the Big Sky. Yeah. We weren't going to get in, you know, and we like that was our rival, in which like we knew if we could overtake them, we could just continue to go on up. And I don't know if that was, you know, Reno back in that time was just, you know, not a little more working class. There wasn't as much going on. You know, it was a different city back then.
Yeah.
We're so big now, even just in my lifetime, and just so much busier. But, like, there's not more sports fields. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's not a lot of that. Like, it's just grown, like, financially.
Well, apartments and storage.
And coming, you know back, what I mean? Like, and coming yeah. back to Nate, you would think with the growth – there would be more competition, but it seems like it's just more diversity, and not diversity yeah. in a bad way, but just, I don't know if there's so many opportunities for different venues for the kids that they're like, I want to snowboard and mountain bike. I don't want to play a traditional sport. So I don't know. But you also, when you bring that up, Blake, I look at it and go, okay, you get these people from these different areas and you'd think it would increase the level of competition. But I don't know that it has in our facility.
Not really.
Right?
Well, regionally, it's like what I've noticed is everybody wants to get to the Bay or get to Sacramento and play those teams as fast as possible. They want to get on a travel roster so they can go play anybody but anybody that's here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, you know, I guess in Boise, they just play each other for 12 straight years and they just have it out. And like they know, like there's really not, you know, it's not easy to get anywhere. It's 6 hours to get to us. Salt Lake's about the same. So,
gotcha.
You know, you're not, they're not traveling as much. The valley is pretty big. So the Treasure Valley is, you know, vast. So there is good competition throughout, you know, that whole, and there's plenty. So you're not, it's not like a six team league by any means.
Yeah.
But I mean, just look here, even here in town, how many high schools do we have playing at like the Division One level? You know, it's like we have like 12 high schools or something locally.
I think so, yeah.
But it seems like every travel team, every, you know, opportunity these schools get to travel and go play other talent, like that's like A1 on their list of things that we need to do to develop. When in reality, I think we might be stifling our own level of competition because we're not playing each other enough and like pushing each other up enough here locally. You know, that's just a complete guess, but it's so easy for us to just go over the hill and play in Sacramento and then be like, oh, those California girls are bigger and better than us, rather than like stick around here and duke it out.
It's funny you mention that because that's kind of another question that Nate had with the tournament stuff.
Yeah.
But do you remember where you were going before I rudely interrupted you?
Yeah, I mean,
30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about Boise versus Reno, it's actually really interesting. I wonder, we probably don't know the answer to this, but I wonder the like actual cultural anthropology answer to where did these people come from?
Yeah.
Because again, like not that people from the south of France act exactly like this or whatever, or people from Korea act exactly like that, but there is some kind of cultural baggage that you bring with you everywhere you go, whether you lived there forever or not. There is some sort of cultural
tradition
or legacy that you bring with you that I wonder, again, like I don't know if like I'm pretty sure Reno is settled by Basque farmers on some
pretty
level.
Pretty much. A lot of Basque and Boise.
And then, I'm sure there's
huge Italian group that came to Reno.
Right.
But look, we've sold up all the ranching. All the ranching around town has really been sold up for the most part.
You know
what I mean? But in Boise, around Idaho, that big Treasure Valley, still a lot of farming, still a lot of ranching. So, it could just be at that root level of like it's
a little more.
It's still working class a little bit more.
Yeah.
Where we've gone more corporate tech. We have a lot of those companies coming into town. So it's like
California,
totally,
you know, not to say, you know, the son of a corporate guy can't play ball, but maybe it is at that root level of like they are holding on to a lot more of that like raw blue collar, you know,
earning it.
Type of deal.
Yeah.
And I mean, even
up early,
like
you know.
Specifically while we're talking about turning this into Basque corner, but but specifically that group of
food
people is very, clan-ish,
yes,
if you will.
I was going to say
right,
the same
like
thing.
Families stick together, and there's a little bit of like, we don't really like that family.
Yeah.
This family doesn't like that family.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a little bit more of like, no, we are from here. This is what we do. We are like this.
Yeah.
And yeah, Reno seems to have slowly slid into, it's a way station between Salt Lake and Sacramento. Yeah, again, I don't know the perfect flow through with that, but
could just be the root level. I don't know.
And a lot more tech.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, who knows if that's it, but there's something to it, right? I mean, Vegas is, although you see, we can talk about that when we talk about some of the competition stuff, because they definitely have a higher level of competition. But if you look at, if we're comparing college sports, UNLV versus Reno, they're both in a pretty similar spot right now,
right.
You know, in terms of struggling to get good athletes, struggling to maintain a high level of play. And not that they don't compete, but it's they don't consistently put out the competition that they used to.
And facilities, too. I mean, obviously, UNLV is ahead of Nevada in terms of facilities.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But even they are struggling nationally in comparison to SEC or Big Ten or SEC programs.
I mean,
no shot.
I can't help but think like our proximity to California, it makes us just almost like hope and wish like, okay, one day maybe we can be like a Bay Club. Whereas in a place like Boise that's kind of more secluded, they're like, we're just going to be the best club here. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're that they just work to be the best here. And like our here, everybody's big dream is to like be able to compete over the hill. Or, you know, be, you know, put out the athletes like the clubs over the hill do, where, you know, somewhere a little smaller or like in the Midwest where they're saying kind of same thing. There's not a ton of access, but, you know, they're just focusing on being the best exactly where they are.
Right.
Rather than trying to compete so much.
Yeah.
You know,
the Midwest is so interesting because, again, it is old, but it is all so close and it's all on top of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, Kentucky and Pennsylvania share a border. I wouldn't even consider that.
They do?
I mean, they're pretty damn close. Right? I mean, I'm pretty sure.
Well, a long time.
I'm pretty sure Ohio does. I'm pretty sure Ohio.
Well, no, Ohio and
Pennsylvania. And between Kentucky and Tennessee. So when Spencer was traveling to Kentucky, he's like, yeah, we took the bus because it was 4 hours.
Right.
You know, so there are, you got your Tennessee, your Vanderbilt, your Kentucky, you know, like you said, Indiana, Purdue. I mean, there are some big schools with tons of kids right there, you know, just back to back to back to back.
Yeah, it's just everything's connected. So specifically with Big Ten programs, I think there is a history of we are Purdue people. We are Michigan State people.
Yeah.
Not only do we attend the games regularly, we tailgate beforehand for the 3 days beforehand. And we like actively participate.
We put the flag out on Friday.
Yeah. No, there's a level of participation. Like, you go to a Nevada football game, it's social hour for the most part. Yeah. Like, it's cool. Like, I enjoy it, but that's because I'm a real guy. So, like, I see everybody I've ever met. Yeah. And it's like a social.
It's not even, it's not about the game, really.
So less about the game. I remember times like back in the Kaepernick days and some of those Chris Ault good years, like, we were busy watching the game, or some people were. I was a kid, so that's my perception of it. But, you know, even now that I'm just 28, it's like I can't even remember. I can't tell you 10 plays that happened throughout the whole season.
It's almost like we're like the college is like an afterthought to everyone in the city. It's like if you're not doing anything else, we'll go see the football game. Kind of
exactly.
Thing.
Even with
it's not like the Midwest schools. It's like that's what we're fucking doing.
That's the event.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you could say it probably better than I could as a, you know, Nevada alumni, but even just like when I come and watch games like with my friends or whatever, it's like the game is like our starting point. We'll go tailgate, drink a little bit, eat, and then we'll go downtown. Like the downtown's the event.
Oh, you're
the after party.
You're out by halftime
most of the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's even across like the student base.
Oh, yeah.
Without so it's like
doubt.
That's
You'll
just
the
culture
section,
through.
They disappear by halftime.
Yeah. It's unless like, it's a really good.
Which, it better be really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah. They've been doing a better job with the hoops and the students.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is. It's and again, I haven't been in any of the AD meetings on campus ever, but you just in my head I'm like that's because there's so many things to do. Mm. Whereas if you're in Ann Arbor and there isn't a whole lot going on and it's pretty crappy weather out, you're like
you're not leaving the game.
We're going
for
to the game and we're staying there until afterwards and then we go to my house. You know, it's just. I don't know. I guess that's maybe an easy thing to blame it on, but I'm sure they sit in rooms going, how do we get people in the butts in seats? How do we get the butts in seats and get them to stay without giving them free meals, free beforehand, free, you know, I'm sure they rack their brain here on that stuff. But because of that, you know, going back to Nate's question, because of that, is that where it's just like you kind of said, it's an afterthought. It's, if I'm a really good athlete, I'm probably not going there. You know,
I
don't know if it's that whole trickle down.
Is it also like the culture of winning, though? Like those teams in the East are constantly winning, so they always get the best players. So we're like getting the two stars.
But they can't
so then we
always
don't
beat
develop
each other.
Further. So then our culture in the city isn't based around our college. And then we just get progressively worse or stuck.
Yeah, I mean... Culture is a word that everyone across every platform in sports like is obsessed with at the moment. I mean, not just at the moment. It's been for the last, you know, probably 10 years. Culture, culture,
easy.
Culture. What are you driving forward with your
easy.
Culture? You know what I mean? And it's, you know, there's a lot of factors there. But the engagement from the fans and stuff like that, when you are a kid, like if you go to a game, even if – so say you grow up somewhere in the South and you go to, a Georgia game – not necessarily you're going to go to Georgia, but seeing the engagement from like the Georgia like fans and like everything around, like we were saying, that that's the event. It's going to, you know, you potentially make you want to play because that's what you want. You want to be the focal point of that, of that, you know, engagement, excitement.
Totally.
So, you know what I mean? So, you know, like you said, as a whole, they do, you know, that's kind of the culture out there. So those areas, the Midwest, the South, seeing it all the time on such a large scale. And if you've ever been around 75,000 people before, it's just an electric environment. Anyway, I'm sure we can get a scientist on here to talk about, you know, like what that many people in one place can like do.
Right.
But you feel it inside of you. So just having that around you all the time, it drives, you know, you forward. If your ambition is to play, you're bound to be obsessed, you know.
And you're taking something that people, you clearly see, like I'm watching my dad, he's an Alabama fan or whatever, and you're watching him and like, I want to matter to somebody as much as that matters to this person. Like I read a book called Rammer Jammer Yellow Hammer, which is about Alabama football teams. And it's all about the tailgaters, and that they pile up these $100,000 RVs and they go out, and they go out literally 3 days before the game, and they get their spot and they're tailgating for 3 straight days. And one of the guys mentioned in the book, he's like, yeah, I missed my first daughter's wedding because it was on an Alabama football game weekend.
Come on.
And he said
divorce,
she had the schedule. Like,
yeah, I mean, if you know your dad's doing that, I guess you don't.
And I guess like, wow, that nothing matters more.
Except, you know, if she had a son or a daughter or whatever, and that story is going to trickle down to her one day, she's going to be like, if she's an athlete of any sort, she's going to be like, that's going to be the greatest badge of honor to her.
Right.
Like my grandpa skipped my birth to be at a Bama game.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right.
I'm going to play sports.
So again, like that's what we're getting at, is there is a legacy there that really drives people. And you're talking about financial commitments. People are making these awesome rigs and these whole things, and they're spending thousands of dollars on food and drink and entertainment and the whole deal. And again, this is happening not just at Alabama. It's happening at Georgia. It's happening at Purdue. It's happening in Indiana. It's happening in Michigan. It's you know, like just all these massive, massive fan bases. Yeah. A little slip. But like those things can't help but drive the lower levels beyond them to want to match that or be involved.
Yeah. How
in
do
that.
We capture that energy and even just, you know, a baby bottle?
Smallest. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the things I was hoping to talk about is is that a real thing? And then B, where can we catch just the smallest little bit of that, help it push us forward? So I was at a volleyball tournament this weekend with our 14s team, and this is a 14s too, and none of them have been to a national qualifier before, except one, and she barely played the year before. So none of them had been involved in something like that, where you go to the Mandalay Bay Convention Center and there's 129 courts set up. There's 129 courts set up with four teams on each court, with 10 kids on each team, with 1.5 parents associated with each one of those 10 kids. Like, you're talking about tens of thousands of people, and there's two waves of it. There's an AM wave and a PM wave. And you're just looking going like, this is the biggest collection of people I've ever seen. And they're 13 and 14 year old kids going, where am I right now? What is going on? And the opportunity for distraction is incredible. We've talked about attention and intention. Their intentions go out the window because their attention is literally everywhere. I mean, it came down to like the legacy of our club, or the cultural, the hand-me-downs of, this is how you act when you get to this place. This is how you do your pregame stuff. This is what you show up, and this is the kinds of things you should expect. Parents, these are the kinds of things that you should expect your kid to be involved in. This is the schedule. This is the walk from place to place. These are the things, like all of those, the cultural cachet, the hand-me-downs just haven't made its way down. So each time we do this, each generation starts from zero.
Yeah.
And that's really, really hard to combat when I am at this spot and I am looking at, this is a Southern California region. Southern California is the birth of volleyball. Yeah. Well, not technically, it was born in Indiana, but still.
But it's huge.
That is its crib. That is where it grew up. And they have that cultural cachet. And it's not just the SoCal teams, it's the Arizona teams that live right next to them and play with them and realize, this is how the teams that are successful act, and this is how the teams that are successful train. And those just, again, we're constantly rebuilding. And then the previous generation or the previous wave doesn't bring anything back with them. And it hurts us.
Yeah.
Because the legacy isn't there to keep this ball rolling. Here are the lessons I learned, build on them. It's that was fun. Bye.
Yeah, thanks. Well,
and then here comes the next wave. And they're like, what do we do now?
That's a huge stage. And if you don't have any prep going in, it's probably a 2-year process to go, okay, I'm used to this.
Yeah.
But
it is.
So let me ask you this, Nate, because NNJ is, and we're going to get Jason on here at some point and talk about it, it's a very big club. It's a very large club. So from your point of view and seeing that and talking about that, is there something that could be done? Because we don't really have any tournaments. Well, I take that back. We have a big one in Reno. Yes, I was going to say we don't have any in-house, you know, so we don't host any, even though we have 6 courts. We don't have, okay, hey, there's a weekend we're doing, you know, so there really isn't any real
up until
prep
recently.
Work kind of leading to that. Is that something that would help, you know, if there was, you know, these smaller things? I don't know. When you guys get together and talk, how do you guys go, okay, we need to start building this so it just rolls into the next year versus, guess what, guys? We're back and it's November and we're at 0.
And here we
and
go.
And hopefully at the end of the year, we're at 100.
Yeah.
You know, or is there any way to start? Hey, guess what? We're starting at 75. And now all we got to do is roll.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly what we're talking about here is the journey and the birth of this club, and really we're rebuilding the sport culture in our area. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went from like nuts and bolts of coaching, like, or of technique to like, hey, this is how you should move your body. This is how, you know, this is how you should look. Now this is where you're looking and try. We're like slowly getting, trying to get a 10,000 foot view of this and going over the next 10 years, what can we do to impact that? Yeah. What can we do to impact this area in a way that isn't a constant reset, that there is a legacy of players and generations of players are coming back, or generations of people that have gone through this program, got married, had kids, reset. Those kids have come through the thing, got married, reset, had new kids. And that there's 5 generations of people that have been in this environment, and not just at our club, but in this general, area and stayed here and can hand down wisdom in a way that helps us. So we're at the ground level of that exact topic, is how do we do this?
Gotcha.
I think we're making some headway in the very recent past. Like, we have this thing called the NNVL, Northern Nevada Volleyball League, which we're really good at names. but Northern Nevada Juniors, Northern Nevada Volleyball League. We're pretty descriptive.
Step out of your comfort zone.
No Tiger Dragons for us. It's just letters. But we recently started hosting some local tournament, but also having a local team base to choose from and to churn through and let these kids, it's not rec, it's not travel, it's somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Where you're getting the training and the viewing and the opportunities to improve, and in real systems. It's not a free for all, it's not recess, but it's also not, you don't have to go to Salt Lake City. You don't have to go to fly to Indianapolis to play a quality volleyball. We just need to keep growing into this area and see how it goes.
Kind of like Blake was saying.
Right.
And it's something I totally agree with Blake, because there were times when Spencer and Drake, we would travel over the hill, and your first game would be against the worst team you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay. And then your next game was a decent competition. Then the last game was the best team in California. And you're like, okay, can't we just – I'm looking at it from a parent standpoint going, can't we just play in Reno, go to Worcester, get 8 teams together, just have fun for about 4 hours, and then I go home, cook on the barbecue. I don't have to travel. I'm like, why can't, like you said, and boys,
why can't we do that?
We could have.
We can.
And played either a really poor team or, you know, I'm like, we can develop it. So just like, so perfect. I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Nate.
And that's, and this isn't an original idea, but it, we got to go over the hill to see better talent so we can yada, yada, yada. And if, to some extent, yes, there is a point where we just, we can't get what we want out of this.
Yeah.
But the same 14 team I just mentioned played in that NNVL tournament that happened on March, whatever.
3 weeks ago.
Oh, it was St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
It was 17th. And we just played in the high school division. Mm. So we took the eighth graders and just made them play up. And that was completely sufficient for them. Now, again, these, we're not talking about like varsity starters necessarily that they're playing against, but they're playing against kids that are older and better and know what they're doing. They can keep things going long enough for you to mess it up in order to learn from that mess up.
Yeah.
Or if you scored, you scored.
You scored legit.
Yeah, that was the point. You scored from that.
Right.
And so that was really helpful too. But in terms of growing out the game, we're always going west looking for something like that. And it's okay right now. We're saying let's look east. Let's start to gather the people that are on the east, on the outer edges, and bring those guys to us. And we can be like a hub for improving and growing the game in this area by going that way. And then hopefully when we go west, we're a little bit more prepared for that. Hmm.
That concept of like each one teach one, like that we're trying to establish, like how do we get the girls that are leaving to not just disappear?
Yeah.
I mean, it's easier said than done, but it has to just start at some point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we need a couple of girls that have gone out and played college level volleyball to like, whether we just have to beg them to come in, like, at the, you know, to get it started.
Yeah.
Because I played junior college ball down in Southern California. There was not a summer workout that I was ever at, like a private summer workout, where there wasn't five Division I guys there just hanging and talking to the high school kids. Like, I'd go work out at Mission Viejo High School. I saw Mark Sanchez there working out. And in their weight room, it's picture, 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 NFL jersey, you know, draft pick, Heisman. Like, you got all this stuff all around you. But not only that, it's like, you know, we talk about role models. And not necessarily do these guys have to be your role models, but just the fact that they're around. And you see your coach talking to him. So you approach your coach with a little bit more respect of like, okay, this guy also coached, you know, Mark Sanchez or whoever. And you understand, you know, again, that concept, you know, the gravity of how big this thing can really get, you know, like in our program, we just haven't quite established it yet. We got like a picture of me on the wall, which the girls don't even believe it's me. And I don't even play volleyball. And we got, you know, a couple more on the wall,
but you guys don't have really any on the wall. You guys have had some, you know, right? I mean, if we were to do the facility totally right, like you're saying, I mean, there's some studs that have been through there that you could hang banners and do stuff. And I don't know if that would create a little different culture but having those people walk in the summer, like they do. I mean, some of those girls will come in the summer and play, but it's usually not when everybody else is there, you know? So they come in at a different time. And so some of the younger girls don't get to see it. It's a process, right? How old is NNJ? 12, 13?
I think the official start date is 2008. But in terms of the building itself, I think that's more closer to 10.
Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty new. I mean, really, in terms of where it started and where it is. I mean, it's definitely still in its,
I mean, compared,
in its early years.
Compared to, again, like we're talking about Midwest programs. I mean, my wife played at Dunes, which has been in existence for almost 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to have...
Keep it up.
They're going to have a culture. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, it's not even just the girl. We don't even need the girls to come back and like coach or like be direct mentors to these girls.
Just talk to
them. Come in and hang out. Like that's the biggest thing. When you realize they're like, they're not robots and they're regular people too, you're like, oh shit, I can accomplish something like that. This is just a regular girl like I was, you know, and hangs out with Nate. And, you know, you kind of see that progression of like, oh, she's almost like Nate's friend now because she's playing college volleyball. She's older, like, you know, and then coming in, hanging out. Doesn't even need to talk to the team afterwards, but just by being around and being in the building and like seeing that familiar face, you watched her go through her high school. You know, if you're one of the younger ones, you watch a girl go through high school and go play college ball. You know, just to see that they're hanging back around the building just to be there and they just enjoy volleyball enough to like sit and watch.
Yeah.
It, you know, might drive some of them to be like, oh, you know, this isn't just like a holding cell for me every day after school. Like, this is somewhere where I can like create lifelong, you know, meaningful friendships and like, you know, find mentors and like purely just like hang out. Like, this is like truly like a second home to me.
Yeah.
And you know, like I was, as long as Struzik was at Galena, I would just go hang out. I enjoyed Struzik, you know, he was my old football coach. Yeah, and Edwards and Melcher and all those guys. Like, I just wanted – those guys poured a lot of life into me. So as I got a little bit older, you know, I knew they were still pouring life in those kids. It's not an easy job. I just came back from doing something really awesome. I got a ton of life in me. I just go hang out and be around it. They never asked me to talk to the kids, none of that. The gave me keys to the weight room. Work out whenever you want. Just make sure you come and hang out.
Right.
That was the only agreement that we made, you know what I mean? It was just like, hey, be present and we'll, you know, you can represent this place as long as you want.
Yeah. You know, that same NNVL tournament that was hosted on St. Patrick's Day, there was a 5-time Olympian in the building and 99% of the kids had no idea who that person was. It was just another tall, blonde-haired white chick.
Isn't that nuts?
And the coaches are geeking out.
Yeah.
Right.
But the kids, to be fair, I'm sure that happens in every industry or everything. Is I'm a newcomer and I don't know who that person is. I'm sure it's not an attack on
kids. It's not out of disrespect.
No.
Yeah. It's just, this is where we're at.
Damn.
This person has been to 5 Olympics and this 13 or 14 year old girl just, I don't know who that chick is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's a mom. Like,
that's so-and-so's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you're saying, that's pretty tough to have a hard reset like that every single time.
Yeah.
And
not
have any.
But, you know, on that topic, when you talk about legacy, you got to talk about, you know, like family legacies like that and like where professional athletes find themselves post-career are in like the Scottsdales or in the Southern Californias. Mm-hmm. And so you have a large base of like athletes that grew up in locker rooms or grew up around their parents being an athlete or post-athletic life, but their parents have lifelong friends that were teammates and they played at the highest level, and the parents and the culture around the family teaches them that process. So when they step into programs, they're coming in with a base of understanding of like, this is how sports are done. Like, you know, this is my family over here. And when I'm done, I got a loyalty to them to kind of, you know, these are my little brothers around here, you know? And so Southern California is dense with, you know, ex-athletes of all kinds.
We're going to break here for a few commercials. I'm fired up. I appreciate y'all being here.
You're listening to Something Huge.
This is the biggest collection of people I've ever seen.
It's growing with every episode.
You know, the gravity, how big this thing can really get.
It's raising the heart rate of the nation.
But you feel it inside of you. It's just an electric environment.
You're listening to Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, A Fit Life, The Living Strong Series. And it's brought to you by Bad Boy Mowers. Rob, Jake, Blake, and Coach Nate will return after the break.
What's going on, everybody? Chad Belding coming at you. The Foul Life Podcast is proudly presented by the one and only Bad Boy Mowers. Out of the great state of Arkansas, their zero-turn design and capability is zero to none. I've had these mowers everywhere from California to Georgia, from North Dakota to South Texas. We've put them in situations where they completely perform day in and day out with their power, the sharpness of the blades. Every single bit of that zero-turn capability gives you the advantage, gives you the confidence to get the job done. And now they have added tractors. Our tractors are doing projects for us on a daily basis. All of our duck properties, all of our different dwellings where we live, where we make our livings, we depend on the Bad Boy tractor to get the job done as well. And now you can depend on the Bad Boy power in their new E-Series of hand tools. The blower, the trimmer, pull saw, the chainsaw, the backpack blower. We use these blowers in our goose and duck decoy trailers throughout the season, all over the country, blowing out debris, branches, mud, leaves, making sure that we are working in a well-manicured, clean environment is our goal, and that's why we have partnered and depend on Everything Bad Boy. Again, out of the state of Arkansas, their mowers are American-made. We depend on them. I hope you do, too. Next time you're in the market for anything that Bad Boy offers, I promise you, you can depend on them. Bad Boy Mowers, the presenting sponsor of Benelli's The Foul Life.
Looking for a high-quality truck accessory that's built to last?
Look no further than Lear. With over 50 years of experience in the industry, these guys know what it takes to make your ride look and perform its best. Whether you're looking for a fiberglass or aluminum cap, a hard or soft cover, or accessories to customize your truck, Lear's got you covered. Their products are made with only the best materials, and their innovative features provide added convenience and security for truck owners. Head over to Lear.com to explore their range of products and take your driving experience to the next level.
Hey, everybody, you know we are a huge fan of Jack Daniel's, not just their product, but their mission, their culture, Lynchburg, Tennessee, the people. And we want to introduce you to the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Join us at JackDaniels.com and learn about the Single Barrel Program, visiting Lynchburg, Tennessee, participating in a barrel tasting, a whiskey tasting, picking your favorite flavor, whether it's the burn in your mouth, whether it's the maple, whether it's the different combination of flavors that you are going to experience in each of the distinct bottles of Jack Daniel's Single Barrel. You're going to be able to choose the best one, your favorite one, and purchase that entire barrel. It all comes bottled in individual single barrel bottles. You get your own hanging name tag, brand tag, your logo on it. You can give them away as gifts. Go knock on the door of a landowner and say, thank you for letting me hunt your field. There's so many options with the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. We're proud to be part of it. We have introduced it to so many of our friends and family across the country, whether it was at a business, whether it was at a duck lodge, whether it was at a conservation event. It is truly an awesome program. Learn more about it at JackDaniels.com. The Single Barrel Program. We've been involved for the last 5 years. I'm looking at two of my barrels right now. We just got our 2023 barrel in the single barrel rye. Absolutely mesmerizing. My brother Clint's old fashions with it speak for themselves. It's the Jack Daniel's Single Barrel Program. Check it out. Learn about it. I hope you decide to visit Lynchburg, Tennessee and get your own barrel. Thank you very much. We travel a lot. We're up and down America's highways, byways, thoroughways, cornfields, dirt roads, back roads, country roads. Love seeing that dust in our rear view. Love looking over and seeing the sun set, the sunrise, mallard ducks pitching in to a pond in Kansas, a coyote howling in Wyoming, an antelope standing on the side of the road in Nevada. We get to do this all through Ford trucks. Corning Ford, Paul, Francis, the entire crew, the customer service, the service department, the selection, the dedication to excellence and quality. The number one Ford Super Duty dealer in the West United States 5 years in a row. They're in the top 10 in the country, and they're in a little tiny town, Corning, California. 5,000 people deep, maybe, but the construction, the farming, the ranching, the almonds, the walnuts, the olives, the duck hunting, the fishing, the deer hunting and turkey hunting, predator hunting, you name it. Corning Ford is part of it. They support our lifestyle, their pricing. They refuse to mark them up. Give them a try. They'll deliver your truck anywhere in the country. They've delivered them to Alaska, Florida, so many to Nevada, so many to Northern California, all over Arizona and Colorado. They've delivered three to Tennessee. They delivered one to Minnesota to our friend Andrew at Wild Acre Kennels. It's Corning Ford. They support the outdoors, and there's nothing better than a Ford truck. These 2023 Ford Super Duties, F-250s, F-350s, the long bed, the short bed, the Tremor package. Watch your speed. Set that cruise control, because sometimes you'll look down and be like, I'm not going that fast. Something's got to be broken. And you're pulling a trailer, and you got a Lear topper on the back of it. The bed of your truck is full. They're meant for hauling. They're meant for towing. Thank you, Francis. Thank you, Paul. There's nowhere better in the country to buy your next Ford vehicle or Ford Super Duty truck than Corning Ford. Thank you all for supporting them.
You're back on Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, A Fit Life, The Living Strong Series with Rob, Jake, Blake, and Coach Nate. Fueled by Bad Boy Mowers, power, performance, attitude. The coaches know it takes time for a young athlete to develop.
When Susie gets the ball and she does this, she doesn't do positive things. And so you can feel like the angst on the sideline like go up when the ball goes to Susie and she does the thing that she always does and she messes it up. And you're like, yeah, what did you think was going to happen? She's 12. She's going to mess up.
And some parents of young athletes just need to lighten a load.
I can empathize with another parent and go, like, I understand why you're acting the way you're acting, or I don't at all understand you. Check this guy out. You want to see this, and he's just losing his mind over this 12-year-old volleyball. Like, are you shitting me? The score's wrong?
The Living Strong series on Jack Daniel's Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody is made possible by FlaskApp, Rigid Lights, Gator Coolers, and Deemer Box. Now back to the coaches.
You look at some of the athletes, McCaffrey, comes from two athletes. You know, some of these.
Mahomes' dad played in the bigs.
So you look at this, and I was wondering if that would come up. So kind of, yeah, that same thing where those kids, I don't know if they have a higher desire. You know, Nate, it kind of goes into our topic the last time you were here, but whether it's that, well, my dad did it, so I can do it. You know, I don't know if it's just an easier grasp for them because they've been there, or is it just because they got to hang out on the sidelines and so they were around it so much and they just kind of stepped up a couple of notches because of who they're hanging out with and being around that they figured out the game a little quicker than some of the other kids that are around.
When you're a kid that hung out in the locker room or hung out on the sidelines, you always approach the game with a little bit more savvy. You can see an athlete's kid a mile away, especially a high-level athlete's kid. But again, like I was saying, they kind of understand that concept of like, because usually, I don't know many athletes that just fall off the face of the earth and are like, I don't ever want to see a football ever again. They go hang around it, and they go hang around football coaches that they played for. Or they go hang around the alumni associations and hang out on the sidelines again at games. You know what I mean? That like culture of like, no, this game gave me a lot of life. I'm going to give some back to it. You know, that's really what I'm doing out in London. The games gave me so much. The kids out there are so hungry for it. Well, I'm just going to go be present and provide it through me. I don't really know what I'm going to be doing per se. I just know that I'm just going to kind of be the resident football guy because they don't have a ton of them. So it's like, if I can be that, that's a step in the right direction for so many of those kids just being around a guy that's played football a ton. And that's about it. And so when your parents, you know, were in that world and you've grown up in that world, you just understand what time around it even looks like and how advantageous it can be.
That's a kicker. I actually, while we're talking about that, my kid played this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to.
Yeah. And I didn't, again, going the transition, it happened last year was her first club season. So it was the first time I'd ever been to a club tournament.
Can I back it up a hair near here, Nate?
As a parent.
Because you don't get to coach your daughter.
I do not.
Right? So you don't coach her at all. So Nate's coming at this, getting to see his daughter play at a tournament, but never coaches her in the summer a little bit, but not, you're not her coach. So it's got to be a little trickier from your perspective, because I know you wanted to give the parents perspective today, I think it's a little more interesting when you're not coaching that individual, right? You know, totally. It's, I mean, so, and you're a very good coach with that age group, so.
It's nice to have a freaking volleyball facility and then have to pay $6,000 for your kid's club.
And then have somebody, what it costs.
Yeah, and then have somebody else do it. If the coach type hears this, you did a nice job this weekend. I appreciate you. Thank you for your time. There's a lot of things that I kind of wanted to get through, but I wanted to keep going back and forth between, I'm not just talking about my kid on a podcast, but also like as a parent that is watching this event, and I can empathize with another parent and go like, I understand why you're acting the way you're acting, or I can understand why you're, what you're thinking, or I don't at all understand you. We need to sit down and have a moment to break these into categories. Right.
The three categories are right. I totally see where you're coming from. Two, what the fuck is your deal?
What are you doing? Yeah. There's a couple this weekend just watching, you know, as the coach on the sideline watching that, it's like nudging the kids like, yo, check this guy out. You want to see this? And he's just losing his mind over this 12-year-old volleyball. Like, are you shitting me? The score's wrong? No way. Really?
It was a 14-year-old wearing the scoreboard.
Shocker. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She looked away for 2 seconds. Bam. What's the score? What's going on? And kids or parents are screaming across the court, score, and she's like, I don't know what's happening, wigs out. It's like that'll happen. Oh, it was in. That'll happen. Let's get three more touches.
We don't have Olympic level officiating going on at the 12-year.
We actually, my favorite, I'll just bring this very quickly, my favorite ref I saw this weekend, he's my favorite ref, I've known him for a long time, he's completely deaf.
Oh, really?
He doesn't hear none of that shit.
He loves it. He's, people are screaming at him. He's like, just standing up there, just looking around. And then, we're ready. So, I mean, you don't rely on your ears in the game. You don't need that. You just watch what happens, and then you
switch your arms.
Yeah.
Probably need a lot more of that.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. Just put on these big old, you know, leaf blower headphones. Yep. Put them on and go about your business.
Yep.
Yeah, and he did a nice job. Even some of the parents are like, he's like not even responding. I just didn't tell him. I just kept
it's like,
to
myself. It's like he's not even there.
Yeah, it's like, it's tough, man. He's really locked in. I just thought it was funny. Yes, shout out to Def Ref.
His four senses are killing it.
Yeah.
He's got four senses and they're better than five.
Yeah,
so totally. Leave him alone.
We don't need this one. Yeah, he rules. He's a really good dude. So things I saw. I saw my kid play some good volley. I saw her run around. I saw her do the things we're asking her to do. I saw her walking around with some high fives, that sort of thing. There is something that bugs me. This is an auditory medium, so you can't see my hands. But imagine you're walking around with your hands out, with your palms up, and you walk from person to person to person. What does that look like you're doing? You don't even, no context. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
Asking for something?
You're like putting your hands out. Give. And I had to walk up to P and go, okay, I understand what you're trying to do because you're going from teammate to teammate to teammate and engaging them. You're crushing that. You also look like you're begging, like you're walking around looking for handouts from these people. Give me some of your, do you love me? Would you love me? Would you love me? And it's infuriating. That's not what we're doing. That's the whole point of the high five, is you put your hand in the air and you make eye contact with another person and they have to respond with that too. And it's a visual medium that everyone goes, oh, those two support each other because we're up here and we're paying attention. Doesn't have to be obnoxious about it. But I am taking this opportunity to connect with this person like this, right here. I see you. You see me. Let's do this. Instead of walking around looking for handouts from kids, you have to get out of that. And she was like, okay, Dad, thank you for that. Like, she, right. Yeah, yeah,
why,
she's like, yeah.
Why are you here?
Like, oh, Jesus, this guy again.
No, that's
so good. Like, so, I mean, and there's some other like coaching things, right, that I didn't want to talk about. And I made a huge effort. We talked about last time about when is it time to coach your kid or when is it time to interact with your kid. And the time I think we all agreed during the game is probably not the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah. We did agree.
We agreed that during the game, if she's looking at you and then she's looking at the coach and then she's looking at her teammates and then she's looking at the opponent, you've already lost, right? You can't divide your attention five ways.
Right.
So I made a conscious effort to not do that and just clap and watch the game and have my own little, you know, sideshow and talk about myself and that sort of thing. Just kind of yammer on my own. So, you know, kudos, Nate. You did a good job there. Check. Feedback within the parents I thought was bizarre. Again, I don't know these people, right? I'm just kind of flying in, watching my kid play on this team that they live there, right? They're with their kids all the time and they interact and they go to practices and they go to this other tournament and that tournament. And so there's some like some hang up on, you know, the success of the team or the success of the coach or what decision did she make versus this and why is this player doing that instead of this? And I don't care about any of those things. I don't have any context for them. So I just, that was interesting to watch, like just kind of drop into the dynamic
the parent dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is there.
Yeah. It's the legit parent dynamic and nobody's ever, everyone is young enough in the activity that they're not at the point where they're blaming each other, but they are starting to recognize that when Susie gets the ball and she does this, she doesn't do positive things. And so you can feel like the angst on the sideline, like go up when the ball goes to Susie and she does the thing that she always does and she messes it up. And you're like, oh, yeah, what did you think was going to happen? She's 12. She's going to mess up. Yeah. Well, she messes up that all the time.
That was really good, Nate. Yeah. Oh, that thing she does.
Yeah. The thing she does every time. Like, so that was fun. That was fun to moonlight in and out of. And then the last one was I saw my kid fall apart. And I was like, oh, okay. We found something here. Yeah. And I watched her go, you know, not start in the first set and then go in and play in the second set. And right out of the gate, pass, set, murders the ball into the middle of the net. And she's like, okay, that sucked. All right, it's fine, it's fine. You know, does the like patting chest, like, my bad, sweet Jesus, my bad. Yeah. And then another play happens and she falls into the net. Oh, my bad. Here comes another ball. She gets aced. Oh, my God. Like, you can see her start to fall apart. And to the point where she was making this move and almost caught it because she was paralyzed by, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it wrong. Here it comes. Oh, and it literally hit her in the hands and sat there for a sec. And then she dropped it. So, like, she had just melted. So she ends up getting pulled out. Fine. Great. Cool. And then her mom is sitting next to me and is like, well, I just can't believe this. She's never been pulled out of a game before. I just can't. Oh, my God. This is so terrible. I'm like, Joe, shut up. just she's struggling. That's okay. So
coach is saving her.
Yeah. So coach removed her from the activity. Yeah. Okay. So the end of the set happens, right? And they win that set. All right. We're going 3. Is P going to go in there? No, I'm not doing that. I'm not putting that kid out there. Did you see what just happened?
Yeah, she caught the ball.
Yeah, she caught the ball, for God's sake. She's falling apart.
It was a good catch.
It was a touchdown. Yeah. Catch it with your eyes. Right. Yeah. She watched that bad boy all the way into her hands. Again, her mom's like, why? She's not going to put her back in? I was like, there's no way I'm putting that kid in. So, no, I don't think that's a good idea at all because she's already sliding. And if she makes 2 more goofs in this one, we've lost her for the day. Let's just back down and let's look at what happened and then we can reform. And so that was one of the few times afterwards that I did take the opportunity to check in with the kid and let's go for a walk. Let's walk around the convention center for a second. Let's get out of all these whistles and just kind of take a deep breath and started to work our way through. It's not about not failing. It's not about you have to go in and be this or be that or, you know, I love you regardless, right? Like, this doesn't matter. But you don't have to go in and not mess up. You have to go in and make the play that you see in front of you. Do your best to it. And if you make it, awesome. If you don't, you're doing the right thing. So keep at that. And just helping her kind of reset her attitude towards my dad is here and I have to perform to what's happening in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about all the things that are outside of it. Those aren't things that you can control and they're not even your fault. So just look at what's happening in front of you and make the play that's happening.
Yeah.
And I think there was some growth there. So again, we hit the whole gamut of there's some good plays, there's some positive plays, there was moments of angst, there was moments of failure, and so I was like, this is a successful weekend. I was really pleased with that from a parent perspective and from a kid learning how to do the thing. So I don't know. I'm not entirely sure where I was headed with that.
Well, I think I got 2 things, but I think, and we may have talked about it last time or something really close, but it's almost like when the kid feels it's right and you can see, you know, their light bulb go off and they're like, and we usually catch it and go, that's it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But it's as effective when they screw it up because they're like, okay, I could have done this better. So there's that learning process that goes, okay, I don't want to react that way to the ball when it's coming in. I've got to do it the way I did it. And, you know, so it's whether it's right or wrong at that age, it's all about learning, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just programming and memory and learning. And
you're developing skills on some level. Yeah. Because you need them to do the thing, but really you're developing thought process.
Right.
Like if you see this, then do this. If you see this, then there's, did you see it? Yes. Did you do it? No. All right, cool. But you know what series of events we're trying to do.
Needs to
decision-making process. Yeah.
And then the other thing that came to my head is cause you hit on it. Did you guys see the Caitlin Clark deal this weekend?
Just telling her to shut up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's imploding. Okay. I don't know if the officials aren't making the calls that she wants. Tiff showed it to me on Twitter. But she turns to her dad and she's doing all this shit. And he just looks down and he goes, stop it. Yeah. He's like, that's enough.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
play ball.
He's like, it's really cool at his level. I'm sure he's seen her do it before. He's like, this is not beneficial to you, the team, the game, any of it.
Right.
Get your head out of your freaking ass.
Yeah.
And do what you do, you know. But, and so it was just classic parent
what the what are you doing? Shut up.
You know the officials don't make every call your way, and they shouldn't.
And you bitching at them isn't going to change it. They're not going to turn it around.
Yeah, guys, oh, good idea. I will go the other way.
You know what? You're right. No.
Yeah. I don't say so I think that was, you know, as you mentioned that, it was good timing because that one just stands out in my head. Tiff showed me that one. I'm like,
that's great.
Because Dad basically was like, get out of yourself, you know. Yeah, you're really good, but you're not that good, so just play. You know, you're ruining it for everybody else. So I think you know, as it comes to some of those things, it is tricky, and it's tricky for a lot of the parents who don't know the game, which you know, I'm one of those. You know, I mean, you know enough to be dangerous, and you're like, why isn't that a foul?
Right.
Well, if I showed you what happened there, it's not a foul. You know, it's, well, why is that one? Well, maybe they missed that one. You know, it's not a sport is not a perfect game, but again, it's really similar to life where sometimes the ball doesn't go your direction and you need to figure it out. You know, that's not going to work. I better work harder for this outcome, or sometimes it just rolls the other way.
Yeah, and that's the lesson. And I think that's an interesting takeaway again from the parents that I airdropped into, is how do we respond when things don't go the way you want them to? Mm-hmm. And that's parenting 101. Is that's what we're supposed to be doing? Is all right, it didn't go your way. Awesome. So throw your bike as far as you can and stomp off. Perfect. Yep. Now that you've done that, now you got to go get the bike and it's in the bushes, and, you know, like
fix the handlebars because they're all freaking sideways.
All right. So it didn't go the way you wanted to. Yeah. So you broke it.
Yes.
Awesome. That's not the choice we're going for. So how do you respond when things don't go the way you want them to? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to get done when we're talking about coaching and kids and.
Yeah. So go for
real
it.
Real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the best programs I ever played in, they took my bad out of our vocabulary so fast. They didn't want to see you pound your chest. They didn't want to see you clap. Sorry, guys, my bad. They're like, we know.
Yeah, we saw it.
Everybody knows. Like, it was your bad. Fix it. Move, find another outlet other than like, oh, I'm sorry. Because you're not solving any problems through that. Like, I'd rather take a moment and you just stand there and do nothing and stare at the floor and think about what went wrong rather than telling everybody that it was your fault. We know.
And one of the things, and I don't coach, Nate, but one of the things, I sucked at basketball. I played for like 2 years and I did not want the ball. So if I got the ball on offense, it was not ever going to be good. And I knew that. And that was way before my bad. So I just was like, okay, you fucked up. You better make up for it on defense because I could do okay on defense. So when I'm watching college basketball, I do that all the time. I'm like, okay, that was bad. Now you better make up for it. You better go get a turnover. You better go get a rebound or do something that flips the switch because like what happened with P this weekend, it can easily start to unfold on you if you quickly. Let that sit in your head and then you're like, oh, now I missed that. My bad. You know, I'll make – no. You're right. It wasn't great. It wasn't your best performance. Now, on the other end, you can make up for that. And you do a couple of makeups, and all of a sudden, everybody forgot that you missed the 2-foot layup, you know, that was wide open. Yeah. You know, so it's – I think kids need to get that at some point, too.
Volleyball's a tough sport, makeup. Too. You got a lot of time to sit there and think.
There's a lot
of
reps.
It happens. It's like a big focal point. Like, you hit the ball nowhere near where it needed to go. Then everyone just yelled, and then – on the other side, because they're happy you fucked up.
Yeah.
And then you got to stand there and think about it and think about it and think about it and think about it. This girl's getting ready to hit the ball again. You haven't even had a chance to think about what's going to happen when she hits it because you've had too much time. You've been thinking about the last one that just went bad.
Well, and the coach is telling her, hit it to her again.
Yeah.
And the girl who just served is going, it's coming right back to you.
Yeah.
So you're right. Mm-hmm. You don't have a whole lot of time. You're like, okay, that one's done. I got to get this one in.
Yeah.
Because, they're coming after you.
That's about blood seven in the water. Seconds. It's about 7
May
seconds.
May I ask, what do you guys, because they group up after every point, right? I mean, I see the girls getting, like, when something bad happens, what are they talking? I mean, obviously you don't know for sure because you're standing on the side too, but like, are you coaching them? Are you telling them? Like, hopefully you got a leader in there that's like, hey, you're fine. Next play. You know what I mean? Like, hopefully that's the dialogue in there, but you don't really know what's going on in that huddle.
Yeah.
Is there ways they can help each other out in that? You know what I mean? Like, as a guy that's played volleyball, a ton of it, like, you know, you just mess something up. What are the best things someone could say to you to help you out?
Okay. Let's get on to the next play. but then actually talking about the next play. Mm. Like, don't, we don't, yeah, you hit it out. That is not something we can take back. That's, it just is, it happened. All right. So you, as the player that hit it out of bounds, you can choose to dwell on that. And while you're doing that, you're talking to yourself in your head, you're looking at the ground, and there's five other people that are relying on you to be a part of the next play, but you are not connecting with them because I'm staring at the ground or I'm upset. Mm-hmm. So that's literally what the huddle is for, is you get into the circle, and there's a couple of phrases that I've said that I try not to say to the girls because it sounds rough, but one is, don't shit in the circle. Like, you bring yourself together and everyone comes together in the middle of the circle. Don't shit in the circle. This is a common space. Don't do that. Like, don't bring your bad play or your thought or your attitude and bring it into this. We're working together in this. And the other one is, how long are you going to sit in your own shit? Like, how long are you going to be like this before you look around you and everyone's just waiting? They're just waiting for you.
They're waiting. Mm-hmm. They're waiting for you to pull them. Yeah. They're like, when's Nate going to get her out? Get her out.
Right. And I don't want to do that. I don't want that. I mean, I would rather lose the game. And I know this sounds terrible to high level coaches or whatever, but I am none of those things. I coach. I just coach because I want to see the kids grow.
I disagree with you. I think coaches who've been there for a while are thinking the same thing.
Yeah. If I take you out of this, you don't have the opportunity to grow from it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now it's on me. Now you, as the player that's gotten removed, go like, yeah, well, I would have got it, but coach took me out because he doesn't like me or because blah, 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 blah. And I like to go like, all right, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to learn to reset yourself and get back engaged in the activity? This is something I mentioned to P too. Like, yes, you played terrible. that was not very good. She's like, yeah, I know, I did this. I was like, yeah, I'm not saying that in a mean way. I just like, that sucked. Yeah. But just because you have sucked, it doesn't mean you need to continue doing that. And those are the skills that we have to build is what do you do to dig yourself back out?
Yeah, what's the process of that?
Right. And that's so important that I can't rob you of that by removing you from it. Now, there is extremes, right, where you've gone like you've netted three different times.
Yes.
And you've smackballed out of bounds. And you're hurting everyone here. You've gone beyond, I need to learn this skill, to I'm just melting and I really don't want to be out here right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I got it. And I am responsible for all 12 of us. So on some level, if you're having a temper tantrum out there, we just need to remove you.
Totally.
And you need just a minute to just chill out.
Right.
So there's a penalty box. Because
it's infecting.
Yeah.
It's infecting everyone.
It's hurting everyone. Yeah. But to a degree, I'm going to leave you out there and let you sink or swim and learn from that positive or negative experience.
Yeah. So let's finish with this, Nate, and I'm going to direct it at you and throw it out there. Going back to all the questions, how do we as a young club create that? What do you guys, because I know you guys meet quite a bit,
yeah,
right? And there's common themes and, hey, here's what we need to work on in the next couple months. This is where we're going. So how do you, what needs to occur to grow it and develop it?
In those positive directions about like culture and again, like I keep using the word like cultural hand-me-downs.
Because I was going to throw this out and maybe we talk about it briefly and see, but we've talked about South Reno Soft. Okay. So that's a term that we've thrown out that somebody threw out at us. And I'm like, you know, so Reno is several areas. It's probably no different than any other decent sized city.
There's boroughs, right?
But yeah. And you've got, do your girls that come in from Douglas and Truckee, do they bring a better environment, a different environment, the same environment? You know, I mean, so you're not just dealing with all these girls from one school, right? You've got a very diverse group of young ladies, and being a young lady, we've talked about, it's not an easy thing to do anyway, but you've got a pretty diverse population coming in and you're trying to create a culture, but they're coming from 12 different high schools that all have their own culture. So how do you guys bring that about?
Yeah, I like saying I don't know a lot because I don't know all the answers to the things, and I would really
agree.
If I don't know something, I'm not going to bullshit you. I will say, without starting a border war, the Douglas kids are different. I don't necessarily mean good or bad. Mm-hmm. I just mean when they show up, they are different. They are different than the Reno kids.
And you're not telling.
It's in like every sport too.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Like correct.
Anything they're competing in, they're way different. They bring
football physicality to all sports. Honestly.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing, unless you get 5,000 30 minutes of, or 30 seconds of play and you're out, and you know that's
right.
It could be a bad thing.
That's not great. I mean, even going to Douglas High School to play like women's or girls volleyball, it's annoying. It's a hard place to play. Mm-hmm. And that they're loud and they're obnoxious.
Yep.
And the floor is slippery because I swear to God they do it on purpose. Like I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I mean the admins are a little edgier than normal. The scores tables people are just a little like, well, that sucks for you. Like, just a little more like,
I'm not giving you that sheet. You're going to have to go make your own copy.
You're going to walk over here and get it yourself. Like, there's definitely an edginess to that.
Yeah.
And I don't, and again, and sometimes it works really well for them, and sometimes it makes them implode.
Correct.
And for whatever that's worth.
I don't know.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And to kind of get to the South Reno soft angle, there is a demo that, they just go about their business of trying to, like, I got this, I got that, I got horse riding lessons. I go to this school. I've got this thing going on. So they kind of, it doesn't have the same weight that these activities do for some other kids. Again, wrapping it back to Amy. Amy would tell me that her mom, they couldn't afford club for real. So they're constantly fundraising and doing bake sales and making little corners cut here and rooming up with this other family and traveling together so they can afford to do the event and, you know, cleaning the gym afterwards doing those things. And Amy and her mom would tell her, like, look, man, either you get a scholarship to do this event or you're going to the community college right down the street. Like, we don't have the funds to do anything else.
Reality.
So here it is. This is your ticket out of this place if you want it. That gives some real weight to,
without a doubt,
every practice, every contact, is like
it matters.
Either I'm going someplace with this or I'm going nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's pretty dark.
It's intense.
13-year-old, but still.
But truthful.
Yeah.
And reality. And sometimes we talk about it, the kids need a little taste of reality early on. And it's not that you're a bad coach or a bad parent or a bad person. It's like, this is just the way it is. And the sooner you figure this out, it might be for the better. You know, I'm not trying to separate Reno in terms of, but we've just talked about it. Somebody threw the term out at us and I go, there's some definite,
there's definitely something
about that, you know, and
I mean, we grew up in,
however, Carolina. Yeah. Yeah, you two are
I can even say from like, it's different, like you and me are different, but like, even for me, I didn't really care about my sports that much.
Right.
Like, and it was just, activity. It was just fun.
Right.
Like, I knew I could go to college if I wanted to. Like,
yeah.
It just didn't have that weight. I didn't give a shit.
But when you were,
I care about what I do now. I like working out, but like,
but
that and I had would, no, none
yeah,
of that
was Jake, sports
it,
weren't going to be your way
but
out.
But when you were,
I didn't need a way out.
Yeah.
You know,
but you did track. And you were, which is an individual sport, and you did pretty good until you had a back injury. Mm. But when you were on the court, Jake, you were giving it everything you had. And I'm guessing in practices you were going at it pretty good. I think the coaches there did a pretty good job of making you guys go hard.
I would still try hard, but the sport itself wasn't important to me.
Sure.
You know, it was more just like, you had to give the effort.
It's like, if I'm going to be there, I'm going to try my ass off.
Yes.
But like...
I think there's some kids who don't have the same attitude because I never saw you at practice with your head down going, why the frick do I? You had other things to do. Like the, there were probably times where you were like, I'd rather be here. But I never saw that in your face. I never saw you dragging around going, oh, how much longer do we have at practice? You know. So there's a difference when some of the young ladies in the weight room are, like you said, Blake, they're watching you watch them, hoping you're not seeing that they're not doing anything. But you're like, ladies, I've been here. I get it. I know what it takes to put a little effort in, and you're not even coming close to putting it. Just give me something today. So I don't feel like you were that.
Yeah, that person. That's probably just who you are on a root level. Anyway, it's how your parents raised you to be. You know, if you're going to do something, do it. You know, we're not going to do anything half-assed. But that's what I was telling a couple of the guys the other day. I'm like, if these girls leave here and like go into their lives and don't understand the concept of like, you got to bring it on an everyday basis.
Yeah.
You know, in some capacity, it doesn't always have to be the best ever, but it has to be the best for today.
Yeah.
If they can't grasp that, then, you know, we failed them as coaches. They're not all going to go to the Olympics. We got to all, you know, come to terms with that. But at the same time, they are here. They're spending a ton of time. Their parents are spending a good amount of money. We're indebted to those parents and those kids to teach them those concepts of like, you know, showing up even when you don't want to be there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Putting in a good work effort.
Oh, yeah. We just had an ordeal the other day where they just didn't want to be there, so they didn't come. Well, that doesn't fly. That's just not how this thing works. Not just our thing, anything. It's not how life works.
Right.
You don't just get to opt out after you've opted in, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I think we touched on this a little bit in the car. I think most of the girls get to a certain age or a certain maturity, and they know that we're there to give them all the support and help they need to get where they want to go.
Yeah.
But I think at the time, sometimes you're like, oh, when's this kid going to understand that I'm not here to ruin their day and I'm not here to make them feel bad. I'm giving them the tools to grow and succeed. And most of them figure that out and know that we're there for them. But I think there's a certain period of their life where they're like, oh, I do not want to step back to Rob's area because I don't even want to hear his voice today. I want to get in the car and go to Slurpeeville and go home. Whatever. So
we're going to trademark that Slurpeeville. I'm going to Slurpeeville. Again, I just think there's a lot of positive things happening at NJ and in our area that we're trying to grow and get what you're talking about, trying to build a sustainable and cultures. We'll use that as the buzzword. But again, a legacy for me is something that we're headed towards where kids can come in and there is examples and there are role models and there's examples of paths that people have gone down that you can do too. And these are the steps that will get you there. If I do A and B and C and D, I'll get F. That's just how that goes. So we're getting there, but one of them, I don't know how much time we have, but one of them was,
we're good, is
more big sister, little sister is maybe a little cliche, but something like that, a forced engagement at first with youngers and olders and getting them to know who these people are. Again, the five-time Olympian, it's not their fault. They just don't know.
Yeah.
And they just were never exposed to that. They were never sat down and this is the history of the game, son, and this is what we do. And then Newt Rockne played this, and then there was, you know, Crazy Legs.
Where's this person who actually lives in Reno now?
Right.
Just so you know. Yeah.
Right. And we're headed in the right direction with the community building because we are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, which yes, it becomes unwieldy from an administrative standpoint and from a quality control standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. Mm-hmm. That gets harder and harder and harder the bigger you get.
Yep.
But it also means you can impact more. You can touch more lives. You can be more involved. And like I was at the grocery store yesterday and some lady walked up and said, so do you, like, what's going on with this NNJ? What's going on here? I have my daughter went to this other thing and I'm really hoping she gets with you guys. So I'm like, well, programs are ever going. So yeah, come check it out. We're happy to. So, yeah. And that's happening more and more. Like it used to happen bi-monthly and it's starting to happen bi-weekly where someone will come up to me and go, oh, you're wearing this NNJ. What's going on with that? Or, oh, I have a cousin or, oh, I went to the sports dome the other day and watched a thing and wow, that was cool. Like it's starting to permeate the community in a way that now we can start to really impact things. Right? We've hit enough. We've hit enough faces. We've hit enough a critical mass where now when we make a change or when we institute something, that it scatters across the base quickly.
Yeah.
So that's positive, is that we're starting to hit critical mass in those areas where we can impact things rapidly.
Really,
yeah.
Swing
and we can make swings happen, and we can, again, trying to get into some of the younger age demographics, which only accelerates this legacy idea, because now they've been involved from, again, we said 8 to 18, but what if she was involved at 4
right,
with something? And not to say that you only have to do volley from 4 to 18.
Yeah.
But in fact, we know you shouldn't. You should do as many different things as you can. But just that a 4-year-old can walk into the gym and an 8-year-old can walk into the gym and they can see it and go, yeah, I know what that is. I know exactly what that is. And this, I did their program last spring and that was fun. And now I'm doing soccer, and then I'll come back to that again. And that was really cool. And just the more people we can get involved in that, the bigger impact we can have.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Coach Nate knows being a referee isn't easy. So here's to you, deaf ref.
My favorite ref. I've known him for a long time. He's completely deaf. Yeah, people are screaming at him. He's like just standing up there, just looking around. Some of the parents are like, yeah, he's like not even responding. I just didn't tell him. I just kept
it's
to
like,
myself.
Like he's not even there.
Yeah, it's like, that's tough, man. He's really locked in.
A Fit Life, the Living Strong series with Rob, Jake, Blake, and Coach Nate is supported by Corning Ford, Scoreboard Nashville, The Provider, and Lear Toppers. Stick around. The coaches will wrap the show right after this.
Vision. I just had a lens retraction surgery last year. It's pretty much like cataracts that you're going to get in your 60s, 70s. Everybody's going to get it. Once you get it, your vision is there. It's never changing. Artificial lenses. I had it at 40s, and I'm telling you, with what I do with duck hunting and scouting and watching my daughter grow up, I'm just so thankful that I'm back to 20/15 in my right eye and 20/20 in my left eye, thanks to Dr. Matt Mills, who you've all heard on our podcast. But I want to protect my eyes, and that's exactly where one of our badass partners comes in. Oakley eyewear, the Oakley culture, the Oakley lifestyle. Protect your vision when you're shooting, when you're fishing. Nothing worse than getting a hook in the eye with somebody casting on the same boat. You just can't take it for granted. The damage the sun can cause, the rays, the UV, just keeping the dust and the dirt out of your eyes, just everything during a hunt, pit blind, boat blind, it doesn't matter, sun up. They make different lenses for different skies. They're sold all over the world, and they support the military and the Blue Line and conservation and hunting and fishing in the outdoors and living off the land. And we never hunt without our Oakleys. Everybody's like, why you always got your sunglasses on? Shouldn't be wearing sunglasses. You probably shouldn't in turkey hunting. I don't wear them in turkey hunting because of the vision of a turkey and the reflection. But when I'm shooting trap range or the sporting clays or the skeet or the five stand, or I'm in a duck hunt or a goose hunt, I have my Oakleys with me at all time. I put them in my banded backpack. I have them in an Oakley hard case. I keep them protected. The prism, lenses, everything that goes in to the technology behind the Oakley brand and the frames, the function of them, all of the different lenses that you can get, like I mentioned, and the way they protect our eyes. The prism lens technology is second to none. You got to get a pair of Oakleys. I know there's a lot of choices out there when you want to protect your eyes, but remember, please support the brands that support this lifestyle. Oakley, the official eyewear of the Foul Life TV, the Foul Life podcast, and everything we do here at The Provider and Where the Pavement Ends. Thank you so much for supporting Oakley. I think lighting is everything. I don't like being in the dark. I don't even like secrets being told. That's kind of keeping you in the dark, isn't it? I don't like setting up decoys in the dark. I don't like looking for anything in the dark. Turn your headlights and drive down the street. Obviously, it's impossible. Lighting is everything. A well-lit room, a well-lit hunt. They make your decoys look better when that sun's shining on them. Mallards perform different, and we perform better and differently when we have our rigid light bars, all of the rigid lights on our trailer, when we can see what we are doing, setting up our blinds, concealing our blinds, setting up our spread, exact distance from a fence or a tree line that we want to be. When you can brighten brighten up the night, brighten up those early mornings. I'm telling you, it makes your hunting success go way up. The odds are in your favor when you put Rigid on your trucks, in your bumpers, in your light bars. Check them out at rigidindustries.com. I can't say enough about their LED technology. It is the best. It's often imitated, but never duplicated. I know you've heard that before, but there is nothing like Rigid Lights, R-I-G-I-D. You'll find them on all of our Corning Ford Fords, all of our rigs, all of our trailers, on the noses, on the sides, on the back door. When we turn on our lights on our trucks and trailers, we ignite the field and we ignite the hunt. And that's exactly what Rigid Industry does. It ignites our passion for the outdoors. The official LED light bar and lights of the Foul Life podcast and Benelli's The Foul Life TV. See them in action right now, exclusively on the Outdoor Channel. Brand new episodes, season 15 of Benelli's The Foul Life. Thank you so much, Rigid, and thank you all for supporting the brands and partners that support us. Having storage when it comes to our bounty, whether we're on a duck hunt, a goose hunt, an upland hunt, fishing trip, we rely on Gator coolers. They're coolers, the different sizes, the different models. You need one on wheels because you're carrying a little bit more weight. You need a 45 quart, a 70 quart, 110 quart, smaller ones like the 20 quart. Do you need a personalized pad, a customized pad on top with your logo? What about their drinkware, their tumblers, their thermoses, all of their highball cups, their coffee cups, their wine cups? Gator Coolers, Louisiana, Brian McGeehee, GATRCoolers.com. No O in there. Gator, GATR. We depend on them daily. You got to make sure that you're prepared. You got to condition that cooler, right, Crosby?
Got to have a good cooler. People that say you can use them other ones still, no.
I don't think that you can use the other ones that aren't the roto-molded style, and Gator Coolers is far ahead of the curve. Check them out at GatorCoolers.com. Get into their drinkware, to their coolers, get into their customized pads, and don't forget Gator skin for your boat, your ski boat, your summer boat, your duck boat. All of our Gator Tail boats have the Gator skin in them by Gator Coolers. And I'm telling you, it's customized. It's comfortable. It doesn't rot. It doesn't fade. It's got our company logos and branding, a lot of different designs you can do. Check out the new Gator skin by Gator Coolers, the official cooler and drinkware of the Foul Life TV, the Foul Life podcast, and Where the Pavement Ends podcast and TV. Thank you all very much for supporting Gator Coolers.
That's it for this episode of Jack Daniels Presents A Fit Life, the Living Strong Series.
I think we can leave it at that.
Thank you, Nate, for joining us. Thanks, guys. Yep. Blake, I'll be back. Have a safe cruise.
Thank you.
We'll see you.
For all new and archived broadcasts of A Fit Life, the Living Strong Series on Jack Daniels Presents This Life Ain't For Everybody, hop on the World Wide Web and head for SoundCloud, iHeart, Spotify, and ThisLifeAin'tForEverybody.com. Thanks for listening and support young athletes.